City Affairs Committee will please come to order. This morning, we have HB 88, Use of Foreign Law, on the agenda, and we have, take that up, we have a CS, would somebody make a motion to adopt the CS, please?
Mr. Chairman.
Representative.
I'd move that we adopt CS for House Bill 88, Version B, before the committee.
I'm going to object for, so we can have a discussion on what the difference is.
Again, please.
I would object for the purpose of discussion. I'd like to know what the difference is.
Fine. Would you please speak to the CS and
roll call.
Oh, roll call. I see who's here, who's naughty, and who's nice. Do the roll.
Representative Groomberg.
Present.
Representative Pearson.
Here.
Representative Johansson.
Present.
Representative Hugh Wilson, not present. Representative Seaton.
Here.
Representative Keller.
Here.
Chair Lynn.
Here. Okay. I understand that. I've done it myself. Okay, please introduce yourself. Could you give do the CS first, and when you get done with that, I'd like to have a quick update on where we were when we left off. I do that in either order, whichever you think would be appropriate. Okay. Maybe I'll refresh our memories of where we left off on this bill, and then talk about the CS, then we go into general discussion.
Okay. Good morning, committee members. My name is Karen Sawyer, and I'm staff to Representative Carl Gatto. We met a week ago with HB 88, and there were several questions from the committee members that dealt with how this bill would affect corporations and business contracts, and also the issue of whether this would affect any tribal laws with our Alaska Native corporations. And so we did, and it was requested that we receive a legal opinion from the Attorney General from the Department of Law, which we have received and is before you. And based on that legal opinion, we did create the work draft. And the two changes in the work draft are noted on the second page at the bottom, F and G.
F and G
on lines, starting lines 23. And those two were added to the original bill. And although the Attorney General states that there would not be a problem for tribal laws, there was an area that said in limited circumstances, tribal members may be subject to the concurrent jurisdiction of tribal courts and state courts. So we did put this in just so there is some clarification on that issue. And also in researching, we found that there are 17 states that are have also introduced similar legislation across the country, and there's a list in your packet which states those are. And so in searching some of those other states, many of them are putting in the additional amendment on their bill that states that this section shall not apply to a corporation, partnership, or other form of business association. So those situations will be as it is right now. And Mary Ellen Beardsley should be available from the Anchorage LIO if you have any questions for her.
Fine, thank you very much. Reverend Senior, do you have any questions? That was one of your major areas of concern, was it not?
That was correct. I appreciate the inclusion of these of these amendments.
Mr. Chair.
Yeah, Reverend Gunberg.
For the record, I was the one who objected to the CS. For the
You're the one who was objectionable, okay.
Right.
And I was does this satisfy?
Yes, so I'll remove my objection.
Very good. Any other comments you'd like to make?
No, that's basically it. I know that there were going to be some additional people wanting to testify.
I have Jeffrey Mittman is online, ACLU, and I have Dave Hackard at the Fairbanks. I'm not sure what does SIOA mean.
State Information Office.
What's that mean?
It must be, I don't know.
Okay.
And it's
Representative Seaton.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just wondering, before we start with the testimony, if we clarification, just for the record, that a treaty that is signed by the United States is then U.S. law, and so the treaties that are signed are not foreign law under this, under the provisions of this. I just wanted to make sure that for the testifiers as well, that so we don't get down in unwrapped past. Is that correct?
That's correct. At the bottom of page one of the legal opinion, it states that the laws are that directly affect Alaska are federal statutes and regulations that implement the treaties, such as the Northern Pacific Halibut Act. And these federal laws will preempt state law. So there won't be any problem with that.
Okay. Sure.
Representative Grunberg.
Are you referring to the letter of March 21, 2010? Is 3 pages signed by Mary Ellen Beardsley?
That's correct. Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, that's correct. And it's dated March 21, 2011.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Just want to clarify.
By the way, I don't see her yet on the line. And once she is on the line, I hope that the
she's on. They haven't sent me over the list yet, but she is on.
Okay, good. Let's go to who is it that's online?
Mary Ellen, Department of
Mary Ellen, would you care to make some comments?
No, Mr. Chairman. I actually am here just to answer questions if necessary.
Okay, any questions for Mary Ellen while we have her?
Mr. Chair, I hope that Mary Ellen will remain and the others will remain because I haven't read all the voluminous material and I'm looking at her opinion now. And okay. As we go along, we may have questions for these folks.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Which one? Representative Johansson.
Thank you. I made it halfway through page two, so I can, I've got a couple of questions while Representative Grunberg catches up to yourself. Let's see. Ms. Beardsley, I have in front of me your March 21st memo to Representative Gatto. And I had a couple of questions on the second paragraph on page one, talking about it is the fifth line down, starting with, therefore, in limited circumstances, tribal members may be subject to the concurrent jurisdiction of the tribal courts and the state courts. And you list one example as domestic relations among members. Is there a defined list of these circumstances, or is that kind of as they come, you define whether they are under both jurisdictions or not? Or do you have a list of things you've already dealt with that are known?
Through the chair, no, I actually don't have a list. I actually don't deal with the tribal issues with the Department of Law, but I can, if you need to, I can get you a list of issues that could arise. Primarily, from what I understand from talking with the experts in the Department of Law, that there are some circumstances where there is concurrent jurisdiction, which means both tribunals have equal jurisdiction over the issue. So if you would like a list, I can try and get that for you.
Yeah. And I'd like to put into the record, we've been hearing comments from Mary Ellen Beardsley, Beardsley, Assistant Attorney General. Would that suffice for the record? Okay.
Follow up, Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. No, I'm not... maybe as the bill goes through, I don't want to slow anything down any more than I already have, but I am interested in that paragraph to find out what other limited circumstances other than domestic relations there may be concurrent jurisdiction. So I'll contact you separately, or you can point me in the direction of the expert in the Department of Law. Mr. Chairman, I have one more
go ahead.
Question. On page 2, paragraph 2, It talks about Alaska courts will not apply a foreign law if application would violate an individual's constitutional rights. And you follow that up with the comment that generally foreign law does not apply in Alaska. And in some cases, the court might confront the application of foreign law, and you continue by saying, in which case the foreign law would not be impacted by the state statute, such as HB 88. So, in effect, reading that paragraph, in general, in most circumstances, foreign law is not going to apply to courts. As you've indicated, judges take an oath to uphold the laws of the state in the United States. So it seems like this is going to be a very rare occurrence. Is that kind of where you were going with that paragraph?
To the chair, Representative Johansson, yes, that is exactly where we were going. And I think my example there was that if there are treaties or compacts with other countries, then in those instances, based on whatever those treaties or compacts say, that is when foreign law may come into play. But then again, those are based on, agreements that the United States has made with those countries. And in that instance, federal law basically preempts state law anyway.
Mr. Chairman, I just want to comment. It seems like this bill would be as rare as a sunny day in Ketchikan, but I own a pair of shorts because I'm better safe than sorry. So if it does occur, I think it's fine to have this to be prepared in the rare event that something happens. So thank you. I'm done.
That was a great example. I like that. Representative Greenberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. These are to Ms. Beardsley. Ms. Beardsley, this is Max Greenberg. The case that you cite at the top paragraph on page 3 involving motion to move a case to Kenya, was that an Alaska case?
Through the chair, Representative Broberg. Yes, actually, it was not my case. It was when I crafted this letter for Representative Gatto, I did actually ask for assistance from several assistant AGs in different areas of the Department of Law who have experience, one of which actually gave me that example. He was a private practitioner. He's now with the Department of Law. And he explained that in this particular case, the court did not allow the one party to attempt to move the matter to Kenya.
President Greenberg.
So that was a Superior Court decision?
Through the chair, Representative Greenberg, yes, I believe it was.
It would be helpful to me, because the bill goes from here to Judiciary, on which several of us also sit, if that attorney could either get me a cite or a copy of the judge's opinion or the log notes or whatever it was, the order he signed. That's the first example in this state I have heard of such a motion, and I think it's important to have that in the record. If there was any briefing that he has access to the other attorney, that would be helpful too. Could you attempt to help us out in that area?
The chair, Representative Bloomberg. I would be glad to help you with that. I would suggest maybe that I talk with the individual. Is Scott Taylor here with the Department of Law? If it would help, I could have him contact you directly, and he could talk with you about it.
Yes, Scott would be tremendous. Yeah, Scott practiced family law for a number of years before going with the
maybe if Scott could give us something in writing also for the next committee of a referral.
Sure.
So we can all have a chance to look at it.
May I continue, please?
Yes.
Okay. Now, the thing that I'm concerned with, as a former family lawyer in private practice, smart lawyers now, particularly in these circumstances, particularly if, let's give the following circumstance. A prince in Dubai or some other place like that wants to marry a commoner without much money who lives in the United States. And the marriage is to take place in Dubai. or the foreign country, and the folks are going to live in Dubai. They come to, and under the laws of Dubai, it's perfectly proper to have a prenuptial agreement, a contract, prenuptial contract between the parties that would require the application of Dubaian law. And they come to the United States on a visit to her folks, and she files the divorce in Alaska, personally serves him in Alaska, so there is jurisdiction over the entire case, and the attorney for the husband files a motion for partial summary judgment to the effect that the prenuptial contract should be applied, assuming further that in the original drafting of that agreement, she was given counsel, knew exactly what she was doing, etc. And then she could interpose this and say, I'm denied my due process rights. I think that would be a weak argument anyway. But do you see this bill impacting that type of a case? We're not dealing with children now, but we're dealing with very definite contractual rights entered into in contemplation of marriage that simply divide the property in a manner that, let's say, after a 20-year marriage gives her nothing, but she has agreed to it. Anyway, any comment?
Who's chair, Representative Lundberg? The bill might, if this became law, could possibly impact that, but I guess there would have to be a determination by the state court if indeed there were fundamental constitutional rights being violated. And under your scenario, I'm not sure if that would be the case.
Through the chair, you're probably right. It may well not impact the constitutional right. I was trying to come up with a factual pattern that did and did not involve children, because when your children involved, there are other constitutional rights involving the children's rights. And so I just could see a circumstance where this could very definitely impact that. Of course, you get in the constitutional right to contract. I don't think it's as simple as we've all thought, and all I know is after a long time in private practice, anything that can happen will happen sooner or later, and we won't go into that here.
Thank you very much. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was just looking at the letter from the Department of Law, and I was on page 2, about halfway down. It's talking about a change of venue, and it says that if there are two parties to a contract and one of them is from a foreign country, they would still be able to file in a court in a foreign land, and this HB 88 would have no effect on them. I just had a question about for the Department of Law about the situation with the venue. If a company from Alaska is in a contract with a foreign company, does this company from Alaska have to go to a court in another country, or can we file to have the venue here in Alaska, or how does that work?
Through the chair, Representative Peterson, the scenario I was giving you there was that if there was a contract between parties and there was a venue for a provision that said you have to bring the lawsuit in, and the Alaskan party voluntarily does that, that's where HB 88 would have no impact on it, because obviously if that party voluntarily goes to that country and files a lawsuit, then they're subject to the laws of that country.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Reverend Ingram, oh, I'd like to point out, Peggy Wilson has joined us. Reverend Grunberg.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm glad this is going to go to another committee also, because this bill has a lot of wrinkles that's going to take a little while to sort out, at least in my mind. But just one thing that comes to mind. We are assuming, under the factual situations, that these cases are litigated in Alaska or domestically. And let's assume the opposite. Let us say that the parties are have lived in the United States or whatever, and they go to Dubai, and the people in it's a Dubai prenuptial property division. The parties have basically lived in the United States for years. They go to Dubai to litigate, and there's a Dubaian choice of law clause in the contract which says any litigation must be litigated under the property laws of Dubai, and maybe even a provision that gives the courts of Dubai exclusive jurisdiction over this, because Dubai knows of House Bill 88, knows that if it's brought anywhere else, it'll never be enforced. They go to Dubai. Would this law be allowed to supersede when the wife says, I get nothing under this, it violates my constitutional rights in Alaska? Mm-hmm. I realize that would be, that choice of law issue would be decided by the choice of law rulings in Dubai, and it's in the technical sense a question of renvoi, R-E-N-V-O-I, which is the question of whose law applies. But, and this is very complicated, and we studied it in law school, but any comment on that, whether this could be used as the basis to change venue from Dubai to the United States and apply Alaskan law, despite the contract and the fact that the case is being litigated in Dubai?
To the chair, Representative Gilbert, well, I think you're asking me to speculate on that, but I would think that the Dubai law would have to apply, or the courts would have to determine whether the choice of law provision under Dubai law was valid. Again, I think it would be the Dubai law that would be applicable.
Mr. Chair, Ms. Beardsley, the thing that I'm trying to get at in a very non-artful way is whether, if we pass this law, this will lead to a race to the courthouse between the two litigants, and the one who wins gets to apply their law. And will this aggravate such situations beyond the point where it's aggravated now? And in custody cases and all kinds of cases, people will be trying to win the race to the law, to the court, because any lawyer worth her salt is going to say, you better file first in Alaska if you want to protect your right. Don't let them file it in Dubai. And maybe it'll work the opposite way. I don't know. Any comment?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg. Actually, you know more about family law than I do, but I think you may be correct. Again, it's speculative, but it could lead to a race to the courthouse.
Just a thought. I'm not saying one way or the other. I'm just trying to figure out what the effect of this is going to be. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. Representative Johansson.
Thank you. Again, as I've stated in this committee before, there's a reason why I'm not on the Judiciary Committee, and I think that this conversation is so far down the path of the jurisdiction of the Judiciary Committee that I frankly don't know what Representative Grunberg is talking about at this point. And
I would agree.
So
I would. Let me go. I have some other folks online. Let me go, if I may, talk to Jeffrey Mittman of the ACLU. Are you there, Jeff?
Mr. Chair, good morning, and
please,
thank you.
And please introduce yourself and proceed.
My name is Jeffrey Mittman, M-I-T-T-M-A-N. I'm the Executive Director of the ACLU of Alaska. I wanted to thank the Chair for the opportunity to testify. As we have previously stated, very briefly as introductory comments, there are significant problems with HB 88 as proposed and even with the proposed revisions. I think the memorandum from the Attorney General's office certainly sums up a significant number of the problems. What I wanted to do this morning is, at the conclusion of last committee's hearing, the chair had asked that we sort of deal with some of the specifics. And I think one specific that would be very instructive is a review of the cases that had been cited by Mr. Yerushalmi's organization as to why this it was quote-unquote necessary. They cited 17 cases across the country where Sharia law had supposedly been imposed on American citizens. And what we did is we pulled up all of these cases and we reviewed them. And what I found rather disturbing is that there was what I might call misrepresentation, but let me do this. Let me review a few of the cases and give specifics to the committee, and the committee can decide what they believe. So, for example, in a Louisiana case, and I will give you the site because that's important so people can look at it themselves. The site is 798 Southern 2nd 75.
Yeah, and you can email these sites and refer your cases to us.
Could we have the name of that too, please?
He's going
and
to email
that is the Amin v. Bacotti case. And what's important to note here is that at the end of the case, the Louisiana Supreme Court looked at all the information and they refused to enforce an Egyptian custody order. And they looked at existing policies and practices and existing American legal system, and they said that, quote, unique circumstances of this case required more consideration for the best interest of this child than for the extension of comity toward the Egyptian Islamic legal system. And my point is that whether or not we are lawyers, I think we all understand that the American legal system is a long-developed system of balanced interests and rules that the courts and the lawyers apply, and that it's a good system that works well. So here's an example where the Supreme Court of Louisiana came to the right decision on existing principles. Let's look at another case that the proponents cited, and that's the People of the State of New York v. Bennu. And let me give you the site again. It's 87 Miss MISC 2nd 139 or 385 New York State 2nd 222. And this is one where the defendant had been charged with endangering the welfare of a child, and it had to do with whether or not there was a forced child marriage. And again, there, the criminal court of the city of New York found that the defendant was, in fact, guilty with endangering the welfare of a child. They looked at the issues of child welfare and custodial authority and came to the right decision. Let me give you another example. This is a case of Rhodes v. ITT Sheraton Court. This is Massachusetts Superior Court, and this is where, let me give you a site, it's a Westlaw site, it's not a reported case, 1999 Westlaw 26874, and again, I can provide these all to the committee. There was a woman who'd been injured on a coral reef, and she said she did not want to have the matter heard in Saudi Arabia because her testimony wouldn't be welcome, and that the Saudi Arabian courts required two male witnesses. And quite simply, the Massachusetts court agreed with her. They rejected Saudi Arabia as alternate forum. Let me give you one last example, but I think you're getting the sense of what is wrong with the memo that was provided to the committee. The case is Saidi Banu Tarikanda v. Bade Shahab Kanjari. And again, this is the Michigan Appellate Court. The site is 209 Westlaw 930007. And this had to do where an individual went to India and said three times, I divorced thee, I divorced thee, I divorced thee. Court of Appeals in Michigan reversed the decision as it was void and against public policy since it, quote, violates due process and equal protection. So what's problematic here is that the proponents have cited these cases that supposedly show, quote-unquote, the imposition of Sharia law, when in fact they don't do that. What they show is that our American court system is vibrant and valid, understands issues of comity, understands issues of procedural due process, understands issues of constitutional rights, and has existing structures to deal with these issues. So that's part one. Part one is that it's not necessary. What's part two? Part two is that it's now a problem for the Alaska courts in twofold. One, as I think the Department of Law pointed out, you're entering into a territory where you're now taking a set of rules that allow us to do business, allow us to enter into contracts, allow us to enter into arbitration agreements, and you're throwing a monkey wrench into the system. So on a pure pragmatic level, what you're going to do is increase our litigation costs, and you're going to increase uncertainty, and you're going to cause harms to a lot of corporations or a lot of individuals. Second problem, as
Mr. Memon,
courts look at HB 88,
Mr. Memon,
determine whether or not if it were passed.
Hello,
or
Mr. Memon. Did not our CS take care of these commercial contracts?
CS may or may not take care of commercial crimes. The problem is that you can have individuals who enter into agreements as well. So, for example, if I want to do business as an individual, as a sole proprietor, the question is, would the CS address that issue? So, for example, the woman who sued as a plaintiff did so as an individual, and her rights were protected because Alaska courts recognized foreign jurisdictions. The question is, would it be recognized in the case where, as an individual, those rights would not be recognized?
And I'm going to have, at some point, we'll have our Department of Law person, Mary Ellen Beardsley, perhaps respond to that. Representative Gerberg has just a very short question, and we're going to continue. Mr. Mittman.
Mr. Mittman, do you have the CS, the Bravo version, in front of you?
Let me grab it one moment.
I have one question at this point.
Let's see the document.
Through the chair, go ahead, Representative Gruber.
Well, no, you don't tell him to go ahead. I do.
I apologize. What I should have said, yes, I do. I apologize.
Okay, may I?
You may.
Thank you.
And Mr. Mittman thinks that's okay, too. So go ahead.
Thank you both.
Mr. Chair.
Page 2, lines 23 and 24. Quote, subsection F, as in Foxtrot. This section does not apply to a corporation, partnership, or other form of business association. As I interpret it, that means that this new law would not apply in its application to one type of party, which is an artificial person, not a natural person in the legal sense, not an individual. But if an individual were suing or being sued by the corporation, the way I read this wording is the section would apply. So in that sense, the non-natural person, the artificial person, the group, would have greater rights than an individual would, or different rights. Do you understand what I'm saying? And if so, what do you think?
Through the chair, Representative Grunberg, I think that is certainly a potential problem. We would read it the same way, is that, again, the bill is beginning to throw out of balance existing, well-settled areas of the law that allow courts to draw the difficult decisions. I mean, we know that legal system develops because most cases that come before the courts are not necessarily black and white, and you have to look at lots of different competing interests. It's not one interest versus the lack of another. It's competing interests. So I think we would read that the same way as causing the same sorts of problems.
Would not the interest of Alaska and the United States be a paramount concern? You say the competing interest. Would not our national interest and state interest have be paramount?
Mr. Chair, I think what we have...
That's a layman's question, I understand. But, I mean, whose interests are we looking out for here?
Right. Mr. Chair, the current existing set of law that the courts of the United States apply, I think there is a recognition of, again, well-settled principles of law. So, for example, the Alaska Constitution, the U.S. Constitution, principles of due process, currently exists. So in that respect, the answer is yes, and that goes to why HB 88 is unnecessary. The question is, does HB 88, if it were passed, would it cause harm? And unfortunately, the answer there is yes as well. And that's twofold. One, because it throws out of balance the existing interpretations, because you now have another rule that when courts look at competing interests, they have to say, do both sides give fairness? Or as the question that was raised by Representative Grunberg showed, does one side have an advantage over the other? The other problem, and we haven't discussed this yet, is if courts were to look at HB 88, are we now then unnecessarily entangling the state of Alaska in litigation regarding an unnecessary bill? And one point I do want to raise to the committee that we did not discuss at all last time is, what is the purpose of HB 88? And again, here's where Mr. Yerushalmi's organization was what I would call a little too clever at that. What they presented to the Alaska legislature is a bill that cites, quote-unquote, international law. However, the supporting documentation that was provided this committee is very clear that this is about, quote-unquote, Sharia law. So what we've now done is entangled the Alaska legislature and the state of Alaska in a very problematic and a highly controversial and very difficult and constitutional area of law, which is there a First Amendment prohibited entanglement in religious questions? Is this targeted against a religion? And I think clearly based on the sponsor statement, based on the example cited, we have a significant problem that's going to run into big First Amendment issues. So it's unnecessary, and it's creating problems for the state of Alaska. And again, the materials provided by Mr. Yerushalmi's organization are, as I said, really do not show that there's anything that needs to be addressed.
As I understand it, Sharia is not a religion, although it's a law that's put into effect by persons of a religion, but it's not a religion in and as of itself. Am I correct?
Mr. Chair, I think that the answer is, so for example, I'm of the Jewish heritage, and when my brother was married, his wedding contract cited to Jewish law. One could call it Talmudic law, but it is from the Jewish religious tradition. My understanding is that Sharia law is a system of law that is from the Islamic religious tradition. Many of our marriage laws
are from,
for example, have the Christian Judeo-Christian tradition. So Sharia law could be called a system of law that has arisen through the Islamic tradition and a Sharia court or an Islamic law court.
Okay. And does Hasidic law, does that is there a problem with that here?
To the chair, I would answer that the answer would be yes. So, for example, with my brother's marriage certificate, and we had a wonderful ceremony. He was married in Israel. It was a great family occurrence. And there was a ketubah. It's called the ketubah. It's a wedding contract. And that could now be called into question. So, again, we are creating problems where HB 88 would not be necessary. But what the courts, when looking at HB 88, would do is they would look at the legislative intent. And the question is, what is the intent? What is Mr. Yerushalmi's organization trying to accomplish? And based on the materials they have provided, what it seems to be attempting to accomplish...
What foundation were you talking about? What foundation were you talking about?
This is the ALAC. Let me get the exact name of the
organization. Okay, Alec, we call it.
I got
Representative Keller.
I kind of object to that. Our sponsor of the bill has not indicated any organization behind this law, and I think that's completely out of line. What we're talking about here in a broad sense is a rule of law. And the source of law, I'm sure we'll all agree here, is the legislature in the state of Alaska, properly elected under our Constitution. The sovereignty of the state of Alaska lies in the people based on the Constitution. And if we want to put in legislation that says you can't apply law that comes from another jurisdiction, you know, to me, I really, I mean, it's just so basic, you know, we need to press on. And in your comment that it isn't needed, okay, I appreciate that. I thank you for bringing it to our attention. But I don't, you know, to say that it complicates things and whatever, I'm certainly not convinced. But my initial thing here is a reaction to your citing a sponsor of this bill that is not in the room, that we don't even know what you're talking about.
Yeah, and Alec is not a party to this bill. Could you please sum up, sir, quickly so we can move on?
Certainly, Mr. Chair. What I was trying to address is when the courts look at whether or not a bill is constitutional or valid, one of the things they consider is legislative intent. And clearly, while this is a law of the state of Alaska legislature, the legislative record is considered for the legislative intent. And that's what I was trying to address. So I think based on the written testimony, based on the review of the material that was requested, I think that covers the points that we wanted this committee to be aware of.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Mr. Mittman. It's all intriguing to me.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Johansson.
Thank you. First of all, I appreciate Mr. Mittman prefacing all of his comments by saying you don't have to be an attorney to understand this. So I appreciate you dumbing down your testimony for the benefit of the legislature. First of all, thank you. Second of all, I do appreciate your enthusiastic support for the court system, its history, and its fairness, and I hope you keep that attitude when one of the rulings goes against you, because every time that happens, your tune changes and suddenly the courts are such a big problem. So I'll be certainly watching for consistency in your testimony. And finally, third, in reading the legal opinion from our attorneys, the bottom line is these things are reflected, the individual circumstances are reflected off of the public policy which is enacted by the legislature in the laws of this state. So I have a great deal of comfort with the legal opinion, and I echo the comments by Representative Keller. I think he nailed it right on the head, and I just don't want to spend another hour listening to what ifs and what the heck might happen if something else happens. And I just think we've exhausted this, and I'd like to move the bill out of committee.
Thank you very much. Representative Gatto, or you would either like to make any closing comments? Representative Gatto.
Thanks, Mr. Chair, committee members. I don't know how many countries there are on the planet. Is it 250, 300? There's a bunch. And every one of them is a separate jurisdiction. And what 88 is doing is saying, listen, we can't absorb 250 jurisdictions into the laws of the state. Now, maybe Mr. Mittman has a belt on his pants today, and somebody saying, so would you object to adding suspenders? And I don't know how he would answer that. He may say, we don't need the suspenders. Okay, you don't. But this is not about that. This is saying that the jurisdiction of 88 simply says that the laws of the country will be superior to the laws of a foreign country. I think that's essentially what the bill is talking about.
Representative Keller?
I'd like to make a motion to move the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to object. I'd like to say something.
Okay. Representative Grunberg.
Thank you. Something that hasn't been brought out, and I don't know if it's too late to ask either of the two lawyers who've testified this.
Well, I'd like to maybe do that in the follow-on committee of which we're both members.
I'm happy to do it, but at least let me put on the record what my concern is. The key thing is that foreign law or foreign venue may not be applied if the application of that principle would, quote, violate an individual's right guaranteed by the Constitution of the State of Alaska or the United States Constitution, And then it says this section doesn't apply to a corporation, et cetera. Two things. First of all, it sounds from that like only an individual can invoke this bill, but a corporation would not have the right to invoke it. So it could have exactly the opposite of the intended effect, because under this, only an individual could say that the foreign law violates my rights, and therefore under House Bill 88, I don't have to, we can't apply it. But if it's the ACE Corporation that is litigating with the Dubai Corporation, they wouldn't have the right to apply this. That might have the absolute opposite of the intended effect. That's the first thing. The second thing that I think is a possibility is the question of what exactly in a given case would be the right, quote, guaranteed by the state of Alaska or the United States Constitution. There are some people, and all of us last week went through the question of whether the Law of the Sea Treaty, which happens to be a treaty, and wouldn't be applied here, but the principle would be the same, whether that violates our constitutional right to sovereignty. And what this bill will do is open up a whole new panoply of legal arguments. And the drafters of this bill, I think, knew exactly what they were doing when they put this thing together.
We can't assign motivations.
I'm sorry, let me strike their motivation.
Please.
And you can just guess at their motivation.
Mr. Chairman, can I interject?
Object.
I want to interject. The drafter of the bill is sitting right there.
I wasn't talking about...
I don't know who anybody else is talking about, but this is sponsored by Representative Gatto. He wrote the bill.
I think we need to
be very careful about talking about who's writing bills for who, because Representative Gatto wrote this bill. It's got his name on it. Nobody else wrote it unless he tells you somebody else wrote it.
Well, Mr. Chair,
Go through the chair.
Through the chair. I think last week we had a fellow from New York or Arizona saying it was his bill, so maybe there's a question, but I don't want to get into that.
No, that's
a red herring. Yeah. The question really is whether this is going to allow a whole different level of constitutional arguments based on this law, and that would be that it violates somebody's alleged constitutional right to apply any foreign law because it violates our sovereignty. And that is an argument, and I can't determine how good or bad it would be in a given set of circumstance, but it's something that I think that argument would be really strengthened by the passage of this bill and would basically say we don't have to apply any foreign law because it violates, or very few foreign laws, because it violates, quote, our constitutional right of sovereignty. And that is something that we haven't discussed, but I'd like you folks to think about, because it will come up if this bill passes.
And I think that legal question is more appropriate to the Judiciary Committee, of which three of us on this committee are members, Representative Seaton, and then I want to go to Representative Keller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And I just wanted to say that I appreciate the sponsor coming forward and taking with the CS to take out the corporations. I think that that was very problematic. And then when we finally received the information that all other states that have passed this have done the same thing, I think that that's a consistent theme. The only question that I would raise and want to go with the members of the judiciary to look at is that one of the cited cases in testimony was that a American citizen, a woman, had signed a contract in a foreign land, and therefore the venue is changed. And so I think the judiciary needs to consider, is this restricting the ability of female Alaskans to sign contracts in foreign lands? Will they have to be signed by someone else to make that contract? So that's just a consideration for judiciary, and I think the other problems that I was concerned with have been solved. So I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Representative Keller.
Thank you, and thank you for this interesting bill and your comments. I'd like to move CS for House Bill 88, That's version Bravo, out of committee with attached fiscal notes and individual recommendations.
With due respect, Mr. Chair.
Just say what you're going to say.
And I have great respect and affection for the author of the bill, the sponsor of the bill. I'm going to object.
Okay. Thank you. Objection noted. Please call the roll.
Representative Keller.
Yes.
Representative Gruenberg.
No.
Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Sorry?
Yes.
Representative Johansson.
Yes.
Representative P. Wilson.
Yes.
Representative Seaton.
Yes.
Chair Lynn.
Yes.
Six yea, one nay.
Thank you very much. This bill passes from committee. I think I'm a co-sponsor of the bill. I would invite anybody else who would so choose to become co-sponsors. We don't have the schedule ready yet for the next meeting, which will be this coming Tuesday, and so we'll let you know what's going to be on the agenda as soon as we can. With that, I'd like to thank the sponsor for bringing this bill forward. Thank you for testimony, and thank you, Mr. Mittman, and the other folks who helped us through with your thoughts on this bill. We are adjourned.